All right, let's get into today's 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. And Ryan, you may fire when ready.
We talked a lot in the first hour about the Georgia basketball season. They lost in the SEC tournament today to Kentucky 71-60, and they will await their postseason fate, which most likely will be the NIT. If you were to grade Georgia's season, you know, rapid reaction, what would it be?
I'm gonna give it a B minus, and here's why a B minus, why I'm not giving it a C.
Okay.
Because I'm just putting it in the historical context of just, you know, Georgia basketball is not you know, a traditional power. In fact, I believe only Ole Miss has a worse all time winning percentage in SEC basketball than Georgia does. So based on that, you know, the fact that you're sitting at 19 wins, going to go to the NIT, you know, competitive in games against Florida and Kentucky and, you know, these top 25 games, had these narrow misses. I mean, I can't say it's an F. Maybe you could say it's a C because, I mean, I think the expectation was to get to the NCAA tournament this year and it won't happen. I think we can all agree it's disappointing. But because we're talking about Georgia basketball, which does not have a rich tradition, I'll give it a B minus.
Okay. That's pretty fair. Again, it's like you said, it didn't meet expectations, but it's not a complete disaster where you were Missouri and only won a couple of games in the SEC and really felt like you were never even in the conversation for the NCAA tournament. Even though we feel like we're clearly on the outside looking in, some people feel like there's a chance come Selection Sunday that the NCAA tournament will call Georgia and they will be headed to a regional or a first-round site.
Well, I mean, as we, you know, as you look over the RPI, and right now Georgia's sitting at 51, there are teams a couple spots below the Dogs that I believe are going to the tournament. I believe Northwestern is going to be in.
That's an awesome story, though.
I believe Kansas State is going to be in after winning last night. I think Cal is getting in. All three of those teams have RPIs lower than Georgia's. And I think a couple spots ahead, Michigan State, who lost today to Minnesota in the Big Ten tournament. I think Sparty's getting in because the one big difference between Georgia and all those other teams, it's that one number, the stat. The wins against quality teams, the RPI top 50, Dogs are 1-9. All those other schools have multiple wins against quality competition.
Yeah, there's a couple other things. One guy named Tom Izzo.
Yeah, when it comes to Sparty.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Kansas State last night, they beat Baylor last night. So
huge win.
Yeah. And, I mean, Cal might still be iffy. I think they'll be okay. They beat Utah yesterday. They'll definitely in if they beat Oregon today, though.
That could be the next head coach of the Missouri Tigers, Quanzo Martin.
He'll come back to the SEC?
He could, yeah. Well, I think he's from St. Louis, so it would make sense if he went to Missouri. There's some ties there, and I
wonder what LSU might do, too. They're going to be an opening. If Indiana fires Tom Crean, I wonder if he's in play for Missouri or LSU.
I would imagine he would be. The interesting thing with Tom Crean is like, do you value him? Where do you value him as being one of the better coaches in college basketball, or a guy who hasn't been able to bring Indiana? And I haven't looked into Indiana basketball enough to know what the story has been the last couple seasons in terms of whether they've had injuries or players just not living up to expectations. But it's not like Indiana has been this program the last couple years that would align with the tradition of the program.
Well, yeah. I mean, last year they beat Kentucky in the tournament last season. But this year they've got a weird resume because they beat Kansas and North Carolina this season, but they also lost to Indiana Fort Wayne. And
that was the game they went there and played. Right, that was a road game.
And I believe, like, was their record in the – they only won, like, six or seven games in the conference this year. Yeah, they went 7-11 in the Big Ten, but they've beaten Kansas and North Carolina.
They're 70 in the RPI. Or their RPI is 70.
Yeah, but and they've finished – well, I guess they do have a winning record, but they went 7-11 in the actually still play. They beat Iowa yesterday in the tournament. They play Wisconsin coming up tonight. But, what's their RPI?
70.
Yeah. So I think he's getting canned.
Well, it sounds like that's almost a similar situation to kind of what happened with Coach Richt. Like, the parties just, even though Coach Richt, it wasn't a mutual parting of ways, but it sounds like Tom Crean might be ready to leave Bloomington because he feels like his services are no longer appreciated.
Right. Well, you know, so it's weird, too. You know, you're beating Kansas and North Carolina, then you get to the Big Ten play, and you're terrible. And they lost to Fort Wayne.
And we talked about this a little bit earlier. It's also scary with these two jobs being open in Missouri and LSU. If they make home run hires and you feel like those programs get turned around, where's Georgia fall in the mix of these SEC teams as teams around them seem to continue to get better and they seem to kind of remain in the same position?
Right, I know that.
And are getting passed by.
Yeah, I know. It's just, where is Georgia going right now? And I feel like, it, you know, the program's just kind of stuck in the mud, like it's peaked at this one particular spot and it's not advancing beyond it. And right, and there are teams that Georgia has been ahead of. Alabama, they look like they're moving forward. You know, Vandy, what is it Bryce Drew that's their
Bryce
head
Drew.
Coach?
Because the other Drew is at – Scott Drew is at Baylor.
Yeah. And then, yeah, now there's – you know, South Carolina's definitely come along under Frank
Martin. I think Auburn's going to be better under Bruce Pearl, even though this is third year and they haven't been as good, but it seems like he has good recruiting classes at least.
I think Mississippi State's going to be coming up too with Ben Hallen. Again, they've got the youngest roster in the country. You know, Ole Miss might feel they're kind of like Georgia. They've had a coach for a while, and you realize Andy Kennedy is the dean of all SEC coaches.
And how many years? Like 10, probably.
But I mean, including football coaches.
Wow!
He was the, I think he got to Oxford the year before Saban got to Bama. So Andy Kennedy is the longest tenured SEC coach.
This is his
11th in football
season.
Or basketball.
Or 12th season, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
You know, and what do they got going on there?
Yeah.
Not much of anything, huh?
But not to say that if a move were to be made at head coach here in Athens, that all of a sudden the program would be turned around. I mean, it's not to say you bring in one of these up-and-coming names that'll win a couple games in a tournament, whether it's Winthrop's, I think his name is Pat Kelsey, or Kevin Keats at UNC Wilmington. Not to say that one of these guys comes in and all of a sudden changes the program where Georgia's year in and year out NCAA tournament contender. I asked Dave this question. I'm curious to know your response. If Georgia was known as a stepping stone job, would you be okay with that?
Well, I mean, I think it probably is kind of thought of as a stepping stone job.
But I'm saying if it was where young coaches came, they would spend 3 years here and then go to a bigger school. Would you be okay with that?
No, I mean, I would want Georgia to strive for being a, you know, a destination place. That yes, I can absolutely win here.
Okay, but the thing is, but I guess I'm thinking of it as if it's a stepping stone job, you at least have guys that are successful enough to get to the next spot, and you keep churning. You know, and maybe one of those guys ends up saying, "Look, I can stay here and do well."
Well, eventually, it would not become a stepping stone job, sure.
But nonetheless, you would still have at least success along the way while these guys are using it as a stepping stone.
I mean, the key is to go out and find that guy, like, you know, like Florida did with Billy Donovan, hired him from Marshall.
Or find an older coach like a Tom Crean who maybe feels like he's not looking to go anywhere else, and you can kind of finish your career in a spot like that.
Right.
Because that's kind of what Bruce Pearl and Ben Howland are at Auburn and Mississippi State.
Right.
They're not coaches looking to move somewhere else, probably. I think
and
Ben
Rick
Howland
Barnes
could.
At Tennessee.
Yeah, it's coaches that have had success elsewhere. Maybe the time just – it was time for them to move on, and they're like, let me ride into the sunset with this other program, but I have a pedigree which I could show recruits.
Sure. But, I mean, well, here's the thing. Mark Fox is coming back, so the best thing now would be for, you know, Georgia to you know, realize some expectations and hopefully make the tournament next season. But, you know, cynically, I just have to ask, you know, we've liked the teams, the makeup of the teams the last 2 years, and look at where they've ended up. So, you know, if we start looking at the potential for next year's team, convince me it's going to be different. How's it going to be different all of a sudden? And next year's team, though, I don't know that even next year's team I would consider myself as optimistic about, simply because I don't know where the perimeter scoring is going to come from, at least this year. You know, like, okay, Frazier's going to score from the outside, Maton's going to be a force inside.
Well, even 2 years ago with Charles Mann and Kenny Gaines, you felt like you had perimeter players, and the post players were more of a question because that was Yonte Maton's freshman season, I guess. Was Nemi still here, or would he had already
Yeah,
grad?
He still had Nemi, and then
Marcus Thornton,
yeah. So, no, but, you know, Maton's going to be back next year. Ogbede, you know, yada, yada, yada.
You got to produce.
Hey, Georgia's team looks like it could be pretty good next year. So did this year's team, and so did last year's. And here we are.
So we're in full effect of conference tournaments, and now we're getting to the bigger ones. Now, the beginning of the week was where the smaller conferences, which usually only end up getting one team into the big dance, you know, with the automatic qualifier. Do you believe that that should be the way conference tournaments should be set up, where a team can, like a, who was, it was Jacksonville State, made it to the, they're in the NCAA tournament, and they were the sixth seed. They beat, they're in the Ohio Valley with Belmont. Belmont is a team that ran, almost ran the table in the Ohio Valley, and then this team, Jacksonville State, wins three games in 3 days or four games in 4 days and wins. Do you like that, or should it be the best team from the conference, from the regular season, ends up making it to the tournament?
Well, as someone who sometimes resists playoffs because it does all of a sudden zap some of the importance out of the regular season, I'd probably lean toward the team that over 2 months won the league. Maybe he's deserving of the NCAA tournament berth, but you know that. But these conference tournaments aren't going anywhere. So if you win that, I mean, what's the prize at the end of that? Unless you wanted to, but that's how playoffs are, though. You're not necessarily finding the best team. It's just you're going to find the hottest team.
Right, but the only difference is you typically feel like with playoffs, those teams are deserving of being in the playoff because they've had a performance during the regular season that was good enough to get them in, whereas some of these teams, you just show up to the conference tournament and you could...
Everyone's in.
Right, so It's not as if they had to do anything to get there. And look, it only really comes down to a couple of teams. There's not that many conferences where they're probably the team that should have won doesn't end up making it. It's probably three or four teams or three or four conferences a year. But these conferences make money. Conference tournaments make money, and therefore you're not going to say, well, we're going to scrap the conference tournament and the TV deals that come along with it to have Belmont go in.
And what have they done now? Are they guaranteeing those teams like are one seeds in the NIT, I think?
Maybe, or you get an idea.
I think Oakland's a team like that too that won their conference and then lost the tournament, and I think like they're guaranteed a one seed. Maybe Belmont's guaranteed one now, okay. But...
I saw the Dogs, someone in one of these articles I read after the game, that the Dogs were picked right now as they were slated as a one seed in the NIT.
Okay. Well, at least that'll get them maybe a couple home games.
Right. But I remember one year they played at like 10 o'clock against Belmont or 11 o'clock.
It was like Louisiana Tech.
Oh, and that was Mike White. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. You're right.
And they were up by like 20. Georgia came back and made it close.
But it was 11 a.m. on a Saturday.
Yeah. Because last year, Georgia has two postseason wins under Mark Fox. They beat Vermont in the NIT, and then last year, I believe Georgia beat Belmont.
Because they lost to St. Mary's.
And then went out to St. Mary's and lost, yeah.
At least that's a nice road trip you're going to lose.
Yeah. Long trip. But maybe Georgia can get a couple home games in this year instead. The thing about the NIT that's crazy is, I mean, you'd rather be in the NCAA tournament, but at the end of it, if you do make it to the semis or whatever, I mean, you do get to go to New York.
It would be a cool experience for the players, but from a fan perspective, it's just a couple of games that don't mean anything.
Right.
I'm sure there are some fans out there that enjoy seeing their team play three. It also depends on – it's kind of like bowls and college football. For certain teams, it's good because it allows you a couple more games to get your team together. If you're a young team, like let's say a Mississippi State, you're only fielding freshmen and sophomores, that's a cool opportunity. But if you're a team with a bunch of seniors and you don't make the tournament when you should have, and then you go play in the NIT, it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. I mean, you'll take the extra practice, I guess. Although sometimes I think maybe the players can think, although spring break is this week, right?
Yes.
At Georgia. Because there was one year I remember Georgia played in the NIT, and it was like spring break was the next week. This was like several – it was that when Georgia went to Clemson and got, this was Ron Jersey's, I guess, second year, and they just got killed by Clemson. And it's like, you know, do we want to be in the NIT or go on spring break? It looked like Georgia wanted to go on spring break.
The bracket is released on Sunday, and everybody will be filling them out as the week begins. Who is the most intriguing team to you as we head into the NCAA tournament?
Of like non-traditional powers. I've made the case. I've been on West Virginia this season.
Press Virginia, okay.
Yeah. Out of the SEC, I had to be honest with you, Florida. I think Florida's a veteran team, which sometimes pays dividends at this time of year.
They have Rick Barry's grandson who shoots free throws underhand.
I know. Georgia saw that guy firsthand a couple of times. But yeah, Florida's kind of, you know, outside of the usual suspects are like, hey, North Carolina's interesting. Kansas all of a sudden is too after they lost yesterday in the Big 12 tournament, because that's been a problem for Bill Self, right, is early exits in March.
When they join, I think North Carolina and one other team as teams who have lost as the one seed in the conference tournament on the first day, and neither of those teams went on to win the national championship.
Right. So maybe not a good sign for Kansas then to already get beat. And they lost to TCU too. But, yeah, of some, you know, off-the-wall kind of picks, those would be Florida and West Virginia of two that are two that I just had circled for a while. If you want, like a freaky mid-major, that Middle Tennessee State is one I'd watch out. That might be able to spring an upset.
I did it last year.
Yeah.
You and I were here together, and they beat Michigan State.
That's right. And they're back again. Yeah. They're kind of like that Stephen F. Austin did that.
And their coach, Brad Underwood, who left to go to Oklahoma State, now has them in the tournament. Or will have them in the tournament.
Yeah. Although they lost yesterday to Iowa State, didn't they?
Oklahoma State did, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but Middle Tennessee's 29-4. So I'd keep a watch for them in the big dance. I mean, to maybe like pull a first round upset.
Yeah, you're not saying they're going.
I'm not talking about like anything.
They're not going to
that.
Phoenix or Glendale.
You're just looking for like a brief Cinderella story.
Okay,
maybe them.
Free agency began yesterday officially, even though the tampering period started before that. But you can officially sign yesterday at 4:00. So we're now a little over 24 hours past that. Your initial reactions to free agency: some winners, losers, some decisions that you just go wow, and some decisions you really like.
The losers are the Chicago Bears.
Okay.
They're paying Mike Glennon $14.5 million a season.
Yeah.
And we're basically bidding against themselves. They're supposedly the Jets and the Bills were considering something in the range of $7 to $10 million, and once they realized what the Bears are willing to pay, they said, we'll pass on that. The more you keep hearing about this deal the Browns have made with Brock Osweiler, it's really not a terrible deal that Cleveland made.
I think it
was
actually phenomenal. They got a second-round draft pick, and they had $100 million in cap space, so they spend 16 of that, which from what I read, they weren't going to be able to spend the money anyways, so they just spent it towards that.
Right. So, if they get a year of him, if they can't trade him, but, I mean, apparently they're talking about maybe trading him, and even if they do, they'll pay, like, half of the $16 million that's still left.
It just depends on what they do with the pick. I mean, it's great that they're stockpiling these picks. It's all about the money ball mentality of getting all these picks, but they have to then...
Sure, because, the thing that's crazy, I mean, on the other side of that, though... Last year, they had all those picks. They drafted four wide receivers, including they used their first pick on Corey Coleman out of Baylor. And then yesterday, they signed Kenny Britt, paid a bunch of money to him. So I don't know what their plans are with all these wide receivers, because keep in mind, I mean, they've also got Terrell Pryor, who they converted from quarterback.
He signed with Washington today.
Oh, he's gone?
He's gone.
Okay,
all right. He signed a one-year deal with Washington.
Okay, so all right. So maybe, all right, so that at least that eliminates one potential receiver there for the Browns, but – I mean, the Osweiler move, because they not only got that second-round pick, but they got two other ones in there, too. They got three picks for them. Maybe they might end up being able to get more out of them, too, if they can find someone to trade with. But, yeah, because they've got all that money under the cap, that $16 million really isn't –
it's not a huge hit.
It's not a huge hit. And then for the short term, if they don't like any of the quarterbacks in this draft, then they can find – we're going to take Myles Garrett, Jonathan Allen – focus on the other pieces, and then if they're still terrible next year too, apparently everyone loves Sam Darnold out of USC. Like, he'd be the guy everyone would take now. But as Jeff has pointed out, a year ago, Deshaun Watson would have been the guy everyone would have taken, and now a year later, he apparently is no good. So, you know, a year from now, what's everyone going to think about Sam Darnold?
Very true.
But so I don't know. Cleveland, they win some, lose some. But the Bears now are officially, I believe, the worst franchise.
Well, it seems like the Texans came out good, saving some cap space, which would open up money for them to trade for Tony Romo.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the move there.
And if I'm Romo, I'm going to Houston. That'd be my desired destination.
I would go there over Denver
because I think they're better, younger, better defense. J.J. Watt should be coming back, and
they play in a weaker division too.
Yeah. And they made the playoffs the last three or four seasons.
And the head coach is an offensive guy, Bill O'Brien, as opposed to Denver just went with Vance Joseph, who was the Dolphins' defensive coordinator.
They did hire Mike McCoy, though, as their offensive coordinator.
True, yeah. But they brought him back. But I think he's going to go to Houston, which would probably be the smart play for him. The question is, where's Jay Cutler going to end up?
The only team you see him connected with at all is the Jets. The only team.
And you know what? He would be the best quarterback the Jets have, so that wouldn't be a terrible move for the Jets.
But think about going into last season, I thought the Jets were going to be pretty good. They had a good defense. You thought Ryan Fitzpatrick was a better than serviceable quarterback. They brought in Matt Forte. They had Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, some weapons. And now, a year later, you're looking at them talking about signing Jay Cutler. And
that's how the NFL is.
And their defense was terrible, and they didn't make the playoffs for a second year in a row under Todd Bowles. And you're just like, what is this? What is the deal with this team?
Yeah. And they went 10-6 in his first year, even though they didn't make the playoffs. And then they just went back to being the Jets last year.
Right.
But they drafted Christian Hackenberg in the second round, so that might have been the karma that set them down this this terrible path that they went on last year.
Would you want Jay Cutler, though?
No, but I guess if you're the Jets and your other quarterbacks are Fitzpatrick, Geno Smith, Bryce Petty.
I think I'd almost rather Fitzpatrick. It just seems like Jay Cutler is very toxic. Wherever he goes, there seems to be an issue. Really, with the exception of the one year that Adam Gase was the offensive coordinator 2 years ago in Chicago, he seemed to have a pretty good year, and earlier in his career in Denver. But even when he's doing well, it seems like there's an issue.
No, you're not going anywhere with him, for sure. And then what about RG3? What happens to him?
I saw he might be visiting the Jets also, actually.
Okay.
The Jets are the landing spot for washed-up, released quarterbacks.
Yeah. If anyone's wondering why Tom Brady's not going to retire, it's because the fountain of youth is the AFC East. Right?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the Bills just decided they're gonna go with another year of Tyrod Taylor. The Jets are considering...
But that's not terrible. I'd rather Tyrod Taylor than what we're talking about with the Jets.
Well, sure, but it's still Tyrod Taylor. The Jets are flirting with Jay Cutler and Robert Griffin III, and the Dolphins have Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill's the second best quarterback in that division. And he played wide receiver in an Independence Bowl once. So, you know, that's why, like Tom Brady, he's going to quarterback till he's 50.
One more question in today's 5-5 before we get out of here and UGA baseball comes on the air. The Washington Redskins fired their general manager, and it seems like just a firestorm because they're claiming it was because of alcohol-related things, but everybody that – anything you read about him, the general manager himself, it seems like Washington's front office is just so backwards that it's unbelievable. What is the most dysfunctional franchise in sports?
That Washington might be it based on this.
What about the Sacramento Kings? Because they have to be up there.
Well, Sacramento's up there too. I mean, because it's until they when they traded for when they traded DeMarcus Cousins, that like the first question I had there was, Vlade Divac is their general manager. When did that happen? When did Vlade Divac become their general manager? And then he had that comment where he said like he
could've
had better,
better
offer,
could have
gotten a better trade. Okay, Vlade. But, yeah, so Sacramento would have to be up there, but Washington's pretty bad. I mean, when you fire a guy and then immediately release a statement calling him a drunk, and then everyone else, like, associated with the league, says the guy's sharp. He's, you know, players love him. Like, everyone loves him, but Dan Snyder fires him and, like, accuses him of being an alcoholic.
And I even saw one Washington reporter say that he had heard during the middle of the season that there was jealousy among the front office with this guy, and that at some point they would try to paint his alcohol issue as a bigger problem than it was to get him fired, which is what happened.
Yeah, so they nailed it. So, I mean, Washington would, as far as dysfunctional franchises, is pretty bad.
And they actually had some success with him.
Yeah. But now, I mean, again, you look, how about the Chicago Bears, though? Where are they going? In a league like the NFL, it's about coaches and quarterbacks. They have John Fox and... Mike Glennon.
Yeah, but I still would rather the Chicago Bears than the Washington Redskins. Because it seems like the Bears, I don't know, just the Redskins seem to be a mess.
Yeah. Plus, they got that nickname. So there's that, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Washington. Let's go each sport. Sacramento's pretty good pick for the NBA.
Oh, without a doubt.
I mean, real quick, with the NFL, yeah. I mean, Washington, given what has recently transpired there, and then plus too, like the game they're playing with Kirk Cousins, because I guess that's the other thing is this GM actually likes Kirk Cousins, and he lost that battle, so they fired him, and then decided to let everyone know that he's a drunk. Major League Baseball.
The first answer I thought was the Marlins, just because they always seem to be good, and they trade all their players away. But I don't.
Well, that owner, the Jeffrey Lurie is finally selling that team, but basically he's just like he's like an art collector or something that bought a baseball team because he realized he could get rich off of it if he convinced they built him a new stadium, it increased the value of that team, and now he's done.
I don't really know of another team. Like in baseball, there's not a team that stands out to me as being super dysfunctional.
Not even the Braves?
No, come on.
How How about the Mets? They did give Tim Tebow like six figures to come play for them.
Yeah, now they got some attention.
Oh, what? Really? Attention?
Now they got some people at spring training. He has a woman stalking him. What else could you ask for?
That's stunning that there's a woman in Florida stalking Tim Tebow. That's probably not the first time that's happened to him, I wouldn't think, right?
No.
Alabama leads South Carolina 57-53 at the SEC tournament with a minute 49 left if you're interested in that.